Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:35 PM, and that is Central Time. Today is December 9th, and I thought we'd kick off with Bitcoin. It's down $3,000. Now, of course, everybody knows what happened last week, and we had the flash crash over the weekend, and the price dropped from about 54,000 down to about 44,000, so $10,000 on the from peak to trough, and then it rebounded. And of course, today's Thursday, so as we approach the weekend, then it's not unreasonable to think that some people are taking preemptive action and deciding to liquidate positions heading into the weekend. The one thing that's important about Bitcoin is that traders are extremely active, and that a lot of the kind of shenanigans that used to go on in the pits of Chicago are now also going on in the cryptocurrency world. They were basically excised from the market because of regulation in futures and options, but then there are no regulations in crypto trading. So there's active measures underway to try and trigger stops. There are also, and of course what that does, it contributes to volatility. But one thing that I think is clear now, we could have argued before today that the intraday dip below the 50,000 level was an aberration. But now that the price is pulling back below that level, it has certainly pulled back into the underlying range. And we've also had a larger pullback than we've seen at any point since May of this year. And then, of course, we have the failed upside break to new all-time highs. So this is no longer a consistent uptrend over the last 6 months. Then we need to take some more back history into account. And then we can also see that there's been a really significant loss of uptrend consistency with this failed upside break. Now the price is coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. But I would hasten to add that the 200-day moving average hasn't been at the best touchstone for the big turns in Bitcoin. I think it is much more appropriate to look at the logarithmic scale chart, because it gives us a lot better idea of how most people are engaging in this market, because it's still largely unlevered, even though there is lots of leverage coming in on the sidelines, particularly from trading apps and also from the futures market. The big holders are doing so in an unlevered fashion. So they'll be paying attention to the broader market, and they'll be looking at the size of the pullbacks. Now, unfortunately for the bull market hypothesis, a failed upside break where the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, which is what we have right here, it would suggest that we come back down and test the lower side of the range, and that is 30,000. And of course, then that will be coming close to the 1,000-day moving average. And the 1,000-day moving average has offered support on a significant number of occasions over the course of the entire bull market for Bitcoin. We saw it offering support in 2015, in 18, in 2020, and potentially in 2021. So we're not there yet. The price is still stable enough, but it's got a lot of work to do in order to repair some of the damage that's been done to the consistency of the trend. Then we can think about Ethereum. Well, Ethereum is the more favored asset from the perspective of many in the financial industry. I think they understand the argument about smart contracts a bit better. And the price continues to hold here around the 4,000 level. But when we look at it on a weekly chart, well, we can then clearly see that we've got some funny trading going on over the course of the last 5 weeks. Every week has been down, and there are lots of tails. So we have got a lot of volatile trading going on in the region of this 4,000 level. And the price has posted downside outside days on a number of occasions over the course of the last 3 weeks. I would Be very careful about calling today a downside key reversal because usually they happen after a push to new highs. But up here, this is certainly a downside key reversal. Then we have these outside days on the 25th and then again in here today. And of course, you have the big downward dynamics last weekend as well. So 4,000 is an awfully big level for Ethereum right now. And I think that this is potentially important because if we look at high yield spreads, well, they popped on the upside last week and then they came straight back down again this week. And they're right in the region of the trend mean right now. And the spread has been rising for the last 4 or 5 months. Now, of course, we are still at incredibly depressed levels. And we don't generally see stress in stock markets until those high yield spreads have been cruising through 500 basis points. So we're a long way from that just yet. But we are starting to see a little bit of questioning around just how much liquidity is going to be outstanding. And the one thing that I think is important about the cryptocurrencies is that they have been magnets for liquidity. And since that's the case, they're very sensitive to the overall argument about liquidity and where the money is going to come from to continue to sustain what has been an incredibly impressive bull market. So this is obviously going to tie back into what happens with bond markets. And sorry, I didn't type in the wrong or in the right place, but the 10-year yield has been rather range bound over the course of the last couple of months. So it was a little bit softer in here today, following a really impressive rebound over the last couple of days and a failed break below the 140 area. So all other factors being equal, we should anticipate that it should go back up towards the 160 area. But we have the Federal Reserve talking about the potential for accelerating the taper, and then the swaps market has been pricing in the potential for 3 interest rate hikes next year. Well, if they were to raise interest rates by 1%, that would increase the cost of servicing the national debt by $110 billion. And those are approximate figures, of course. And that's assuming that the total debt outstanding remains unchanged. Of course, if the total debt increases, well, then the sensitivity to interest rates also increases. And of course, we've had a reasonably sized advance in the 5-year yield. And the 5-year yield approximates the duration of US government debt. And it looks a lot better supported than the 10-year. So the yield bottomed around 25 basis points, and it's up about 100 basis points since the middle of 2020. So that's added $110 billion to the cost of servicing the debt. Now, if it moves higher from here, the reality is that the cost of servicing the national debt in the USA went down in 2020, and then it went back up again in 2021, and it pretty much completely unwound the savings that were made by the decline in yields. So if yields go much higher from here, well, then we're going to be at new all-time highs for the cost of servicing the debt, and then the debt will continue higher. So then you're going to get a multiplication factor in terms of how difficult it's going to be to continue to service the debt, which will then compound again because it will create a further need to print even more bonds. So obviously, this is an interesting environment because you have a central bank which is talking about accelerating the taper and raising interest rates, and then you have the reality of needing to pay down the debt and service the debt, which is going to make it that kind of decision extraordinarily difficult. And that's a good part of the reason why the stock market remains quite firm. Because one thing that we saw in the last cycle was that Europe was, you had the Japanization of Europe. They were unable to raise rates in the Eurozone in the aftermath of the credit crisis. And there was tons of outstanding non-performing loans. They're slowly but surely starting to unwind those. They went through this entire or almost a decade of fiscal austerity, and it didn't work. And it instead birthed significant protest movements right across the continent. So that's over. They're now back in spending mode, and the fiscal austerity is no longer being considered. So Europe is now in a situation where they're unable to raise rates, and they are going to be in a position like that for a prolonged period until they get economic growth firing again. But with challenging demographics, they're in the same situation as Japan in that they need a significant influx of young people, and they need those people to be productive in order to reignite economic growth. Now, the big question is, in the aftermath of the pandemic, are we going to see something similar in the USA? Is the USA going to be able to break that cycle and eventually be able to raise rates? And the jury is still out. It's certainly a big question whether they're going to be able to go ahead and in fact raise rates. But bond yields continue to trend higher, so this is going to come to a head. Now, when we think about how that plays out in stock markets, well, stock markets remain reasonably firm, but beginning to ease a bit as they come back into the region of the peak. So we're getting a little bit of a reticence to pay all-time highs for these stocks when there are these questions outstanding about the outlook for the wider economy, and particularly the Federal Reserve's view about what to do about interest rates. Now, when we think in those terms, it's important to pay attention to the consistency of the trends. So the Nasdaq has got a sequence of ranges one above another, and it bounced exactly where it needed to this week. So that was a really impressive bounce. And it's from the region of the upper side of the underlying range, and each of those ranges is relatively similar sized, and they haven't tended to dip into one another. So, as long as it's holding the lows, well, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But it certainly needs to continue to hold the low. Then there's the potential, if it fails, that would be a trend in consistency, that it's going to come back down and test the region of the trend mean, and that's not all that far away either. If we move into a deeper process of consolidation, well, then the 1,000-day moving average is kind of a long way off. And we should then think about that in terms of the log scale chart, because a lot of the large funds do so on an unlevered basis. So we can think then about the tendency of the market to find support in the region of or above the 1,000-day moving average. And we have never been this overextended relative to the 1,000-day moving average, although the period right ahead of the peak in early 2020 came close. So, in worst case scenario, we could come back down and test the upper side of that underlying range, which would take us back to the region of the 10,000 level. And of course, that is a phenomenally large pullback from where the prices are right now, and it would have global repercussions. And of course, it would have to be greeted by a significant tightening of liquidity. And it is extremely arguable whether the Federal Reserve has the stomach to do that. We are obviously seeing inflationary pressures rising, and some of those inflationary pressures have got some aspect of permanence to them, particularly wage growth. But the automotive companies and the semiconductor companies think that a large number of the supply chain issues will be fixed by the middle of the year. I also saw that It may be the middle of next year by the time the port facilities on the west coast of the USA are freed up. So that's taking us to the middle of next year when a number of potential factors to control inflation are going to start to come into force. And it will coalesce very neatly with the timing of when the first interest rate might or hike might occur. So we might be looking at an environment where the Federal Reserve goes for simply one and done. Now, obviously, they want to try and raise rates as much as they can so that they can cut them again during the next recession. But they're going to be extraordinarily cautious because the last thing they want is to jeopardize the economic expansion that cost them literally trillions and trillions of dollars to create. So, obviously, we are in a rather interesting environment. But when we think about liquidity, well, the USA isn't the only place that liquidity comes from. And we are starting to see that it's likely at this stage that the credit impulse in China is beginning to turn. And the CSI 300 was up in a reasonably dynamic manner today, so it is pulling away from this range that's been forming now for about 5 months and firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. Then we can think about the Chinese high-yield real estate sector. And one thing that I think is particularly relevant here is that both the high-yield sector and the high-yield property sector have put in a higher reaction low. So if that's the case, and considering the fact that the bankruptcy of China Evergrande was confirmed today, Caixa has also gone bankrupt, and Aoyuan is also likely to go bankrupt. So the number of property developers that there are significant issues with is increasing, and yet these bonds continue to put in a higher reaction low. So what that suggests is that the Chinese government is intervening and they're making some liquidity available to the most embattled of the property developers. And what they're going to try and do is slow down the pace with which these companies are going bust. But we will have more bankruptcies. And the big question around China has been, what's the natural bankruptcy rate for the economy? Because we know and we have figures that are representative for the US and the European economies that during a crisis, what percentage of them generally tend to default. But default in China is a new thing, so we just don't know what that absolute figure is yet. But the chances are that it's higher than where it is today. So they're doing a forensic audit of all the local governments, and the results of that audit are probably going to be a state secret. But it's probably going to take about 6 months. It might even take a year to come up with an answer for just how big the debt is. But then we'll start to see decisions being made about which will be saved and which won't. So we're going to see a significant amount of dispersion in the performance of property developers, because some will obviously be rescued and others will be allowed to go bust. And foreign investors are going to be burned. And I think that should be fair warning for everybody, because we're going to see that US dollar bond holders are probably going to get burned most with little recourse to the courts in China. Then we can look at what's happening in terms of the listings of companies in the USA. And I think it's fair to say that Didi is well was an egregious example of flouting regulators by seeking a listing in the first place. So they're going to be forced to delist, but they're probably going to also force other companies to delist. But in between now and then, investors seem pretty happy to to continue to look at these shares. So JD.com and a number of others were in positive territory in here today. But the much bigger picture here is that we are seeing evidence that the Chinese government is intervening. They're supporting the stock market. They're supporting the property market. Now, they did raise reserve requirements on the banks. They're trying to ensure that the currency doesn't appreciate beyond all recognition while they rescue the economy. So that was a reasonably sized upward dynamic today for the dollar versus the renminbi. That's also helping to support the dollar index overall. And the dollar index was a little steadier in here today. So this continues to look like a range which is gradually unwinding the short-term overbought condition. And of course, that's also helping U.S. assets to continue to attract interest from international investors because they get the asset appreciation plus the currency in their favor. So when then we think about international equities, well, they can appreciate nominal terms. And India, for example, is back in the region of the trend mean and it's beginning to steady around the 17,000 level. But international investors will be paying attention to what happens in the currencies. And the rupee is now depreciating once more. So there's a clear sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 6 months. And there's the potential that it is going to weaken further from here. And it's generally the time when after the devaluations has been the most attractive time for foreign investors to start to accumulate Indian assets once more. Then let's think about Brazil. Brazil's or the commitment to fiscal responsibility that the Bolsonaro government made would have been a significant fiscal austerity move next year. And even if they break it, they're still going to be spending less money than they did in 2019, not a mind 2020. So we are starting to see some measures put in place to try and curtail inflationary pressures. Now, the real was a little weaker in here today, but it's been ranging for nearly a year, and it continues to hold the sixth level. And if it can steady through the 200-day moving average and come down and back through the 5 level, well then that's going to be a green light for foreign investors to become interested in Brazil once more. So we've had quite a bit of volatility today in commodity prices, and investors are beginning to wonder about what happens with the Omicron variant. There's been bouts of depression and enthusiasm in equal measure over the course of the last 2 weeks. The point I was making, I think it was last week, is that because it is more transmissible, it's unlikely to be in equal measure less deadly. So we should, on average, see fewer people ending up in hospital, but because it's so much more transmissible, then it will have a knock-on effect. And of course, that is ignoring the fact that vaccines have been effective. And while some people who've been vaccinated will inevitably contract this variant, then there will be booster shots. And Pfizer has been saying that they believe that their booster shot is effective, but it is weighing on Europe. And perhaps the decline that we saw today in carbon credit prices has been an indicator of the fact that maybe Europe is experiencing more stress than is readily available or readily observable in the performance of their respective stock markets. So the Euro Stoxx index has bounced and then paused over the last couple of days, but it still remains in a broad bull market trend overall. And this is the clear market reality, that we have these uptrends that are evident in the vast majority of markets. But the performance of the respective currencies makes the trends look completely different when we re-denominate them into US dollars. And then, of course, the Australian dollar pulled back extremely violently in November, but it is now starting to rebound. But Australia doesn't want a strong currency. Perhaps the USA is more willing to tolerate a strong currency because they need the foreign capital and they need to continue to instill confidence in the bond markets. Because it's one thing, and I talked yesterday about the difference between the push and the pull in the emerging markets, but let's think for a moment about the push and pull in the bond markets. Because the strength of the dollar is a major support for US assets, and yet the bond yield continues to trend higher, and particularly the 5-year. So, in the absence of a strong dollar, then not only would foreign investors continue to desert the market, but that domestic investors might start to think more seriously about buying bonds somewhere else. And international investors are already buying Chinese bonds, and the Chinese renminbi-denominated debt has been doing substantially better over the course of this year, and not least because the renminbi has been strong and then the yield is higher. So that compounds faster and you get a better total return overall. The one thing that I think is relevant right now is not so much the trend for junk bonds. I started off by looking at junk bond spreads, but I think it's important to pay attention to junk bond prices. So the iBoxx high yield corporate bond ETF, HYG, it's pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. But because they pay dividends, then the total return from the perspective of a longer-term investor or an unlevered medium-term investor is more important. So the total return completely reverses the trend, and it's been trending higher for years. And that initial price trend we looked at was from 2013 onwards. So it had a significant pullback in 2020, just like everything else. And then it rebounded and kept going. Now we're in a position where the price had rallied back up to test the region of the highs, and then it's starting to pull back in here today. Now, generally speaking, when on other occasions where we've seen sequences of lower rally highs, they've generally consist or I think been consistent with periods of stress in the market. So this was a lower high, and now we have another lower high here. And it's really important that high yield spreads don't surge. So obviously, the repercussions of the pandemic still haven't been fixed, and the debt forgiveness and the loans that were taken out, and then the mortgage forbearance, all of those are still outstanding issues that are sitting out there on the horizon. And all the students that were anticipating that their loans, or former students that they were anticipating that their loans would be forgiven, they're all sitting out there as well and waiting for some kind of resolution. So there is the potential that the US is not going to be able to raise rates. If that's the case, well then there's going to have to be some sort of accommodation made with bond investors, and the Federal Reserve might have to buy more bonds, so they'd have to abandon their taper. I suspect they're not going to do that until there's a substantial pullback. And the last time they had to reverse course was in 2018, when high yield spreads peaked in September of that year and trended down to towards the end of the year. And we had a 20% pullback on the stock market, and then the Federal Reserve shied away from quantitative tapering, started cutting interest rates, and sustained the bull market, and we had a rebound in 2019. So what happens in the high yield sector is important because the stock market is still trending higher in a consistent manner for in the vast majority of cases. it's in the bond markets, and where liquidity is to be found is where we need to pay attention, because it will have a knock-on effect for assets overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.